From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in an executive order signed by President Trump this week. This order suspends refugee admissions to the United States. It's a move that appears to jeopardize the status of thousands of Afghan citizens who worked with the United States government during the war. On this program, we've told the stories of many SIVs, men and women who arrive in the United States on a special immigrant visa, granted because of their service to the United States Armed Forces. At this point, it is possible that the SIV program will be separated and spared from this executive order. It is not clear. Organizations that work, for example, with SIVs want more clarity. They might be feeling some anxiety about what is coming next. And frankly, for years, the SIV programs under administrations in both parties have moved slowly. They get behind schedule, and people are often left behind. So we're talking SIVs, yes, but we're talking broadly about what we are seeing with this refugee order, what that means, and what comes next here. And let me welcome our guest this hour. In the studio with us here, Ellen Smith is the founder and executive director of Keeping Our Promise. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan, as always, for having us.
Remind listeners what Keeping Our Promise does.
Keeping Our Promise resettles wartime allies who worked for the U.S. military and the State Department in conflict zones.
Welcome as well to Getachew Bashir, who is director of the Refugee Department at Catholic Charities Family and Community Services. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome on the line to General John Bradley, retired Lieutenant General in the United States Air Force and co-founder of the Lamia Afghan Foundation. General, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for inviting me back. I appreciate it.
General, tell us again what the foundation does.
The Lamia Afghan Foundation was established mainly to build schools for girls. Of course, the Taliban have control of those schools now. We built 9, but we have 23 schools for girls in homes now. We feed families, we provide humanitarian aid, but we educate girls in 23 homes with 25 girls in each, and we go to 12th grade.
Remarkable work. And let me welcome as well Sean Van Diver, who is president and chairman of Afghan Evac. Sean, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
So look, thank you so much for having me. You know, whenever Ellen asks me to do something, I just do it.
You are not the first person who has said that in this community. Sean, tell us what your organization does.
Sure. Afghan Evac came together in August of 2021 when my buddy Lucky said, "Brother, I'm stuck. Surrounded by the Taliban, running out of ammunition. Please help get my family back to San Diego." Thought he was going to die. Just like thousands of others across this country. And I have a background in emergency management and national security and politics. And I said, you know what? There's all these people that are talking in all these separate groups. We need to bring them together. So Afghan Evac brings together organizations focused on helping our wartime allies to make sure they're working from the same sheet of music, that they have accurate information, and that they're pressing government unified so that we can achieve the goals that we have, which is just to get our allies here.
I will say at the outset here that maybe a little bit unlike the conversation last hour, the conversation this hour is going to talk about this executive order. It's going to talk about what's happening with this new administration. This is not meant to be, and this is really not filled with panelists who are partisan. In fact, they are distinctly, from my understanding, nonpartisan and really interested in the work they're doing, regardless of administration. I know that's kind of the caveat we give a lot, Ellen, and for good reason, I think, for your organization and for these others here. But do you want to just say a word about that before we kind of get going here?
Yeah, we are nonpartisan, and it's just my goal is to make sure our wartime allies are resettled in decent housing and have the support that other veterans have when they come home from war.
So let me ask all four of our guests just for kind of the 30,000-foot view of this executive order, and then we're going to work through how their work could be impacted going forward, the work they're trying to do in the winter, all throughout this year and beyond, and what we are facing. Let me start with Ellen. You heard about this this executive order affecting refugees. I'm trying to better understand it myself. How do you see it?
Well, the first thing I saw when I read the order was that it was geared towards those refugees coming through what we call the USRAP system, and SIVs are not in that system. And then this morning, it was a message went out to everyone from PRM that SIVs were not included in this executive order. Now, I hold my breath on that because anything can change on any day. But I'm really saddened knowing all the other Afghans that have come to Rochester through the P1 or P2 program. We have asylee cases still from the evacuation, and I wonder what's going to happen to them, and they wonder as well. I mean, I have had two people in my office this morning. The first person, who is actually Ukrainian, said, "Why am I here? Why am I here, and where do I go?" And then, one of our staff members was very tearful. She's waiting for her green card, and she just said, "I am feeling so overwhelmed." Mm. These are people that we want to support, and I'm just saying to them, "I've got your back. I will do as much as I can and get the message out."
Would you be surprised at this point if SIVs are affected by this particular order?
I would be, because I just see so many cross political support for the SIV program. I mean, these are people who did work for the United States. So I am surprised, but I'm also surprised to see the P2 program included in the executive order, because they too were working for a lot of programs that were supported by the U.S. in Afghanistan. And Sean can talk more about that, or Gigi.
Sean, you want to follow up there?
Yeah, look, this executive order was, I don't think, surprising. I think people expected that there would be executive orders on immigration and on refugees. We did a letter last week, or over the last few weeks, calling to the incoming administration, now the current administration, saying, like, "Hey, just a heads up, like, as you're thinking about this, make sure that you do carve-outs for Afghans, make sure this, make sure that, make sure there's funding, make sure you're publicly supportive." They seem to have not gotten the memo. We know they got it. It seems like they did not heed it. But look, the types of people impacted by this order are lawyers and prosecutors and judges who put the Taliban in jail. They're women pilots from the Afghan military and other partner forces, folks that went to our Green Beret Q course in the Army, trained, fought alongside, and bled alongside our Green Berets, and indeed family of active duty U.S. service members. And the numbers here are pretty staggering, right? We're talking about 10,000 Afghans who are fully vetted, security vetted, ready to travel across Afghanistan and Pakistan. And then all told, probably somewhere between 50 and 60,000 people who are, for one reason or another, because of their association with us, in danger and at risk. And we've got to keep the national promise, right? Our word cannot be temporary or conditional based on who's in the Oval Office. And look, we think that this was an oversight. We think that President Trump didn't mean to do this. We think that because he campaigned on this, he talked about it, you know, at every debate. He had a lot of feelings about the withdrawal. We all thought it was very chaotic, and he made it clear that we shouldn't leave folks behind. And now he won. And, you know, at the RNC, they talked about it every day. So we're hoping that he recognizes the error of his ways and will amend this.
I want to add one more thing just to put a local face or perspective on this. One of the families that KOP is helping are survivors from the drone strike, when the U.S. wrongly bombed a U.S. aid worker that General Bradley knows. And we have some of those family members here in Rochester. And I worked very hard to get all the documents together for the remaining family members there in Afghanistan, who appear, by the way, to qualify for SIV, but we thought it would be quicker to move them through the regular refugee program. DOD acknowledged this family and said, "Yes, we will take them. This is like the last drone strike survivors that we're taking." But they're affected by this. The people that we killed, their family members, and they are affected by this order.
But do you, Ellen, agree with Sean that maybe this was an oversight, or just the president didn't mean to do this?
I don't know what the president and his advisors are thinking, but we do know that some of his advisors are very anti-Muslim. And I guess I'm not as gracious as Sean on that, because I just remember what it was like in 2017.
Let me ask General Bradley for your thoughts on the order so far, General.
Well, Sean has given you a good synopsis of it. I am not totally pessimistic about this. I'm optimistic, but I don't know how soon the P2 part of this, P1, P2 part of this might be broken off so it can continue. I do believe the SIVs will continue. I have a very good feeling about that. This family that survived the drone strike, they worked for a fabulous nonprofit that I worked with extensively in my nonprofit work. And it was just a horrible mistake in killing this this man, along seven children, along with three adults. It was a mistaken drone strike that killed them during the evacuation. A lot of that family has been brought to the United States, but they could be in jeopardy of perhaps being sent out. I do believe the main emphasis on this administration will be on illegal immigration. Obviously, there'll be a lot of that, but this is legal legal immigration, the P1, P2, the SIV processes. So I think eventually it will get back on track. That's my hope and my prayer and my belief.
If I remember correctly, General, I think the president said at his inauguration that he loves legal immigration and wants to see more of it and that we need it.
And, you know, the laws are the laws, and the laws allow for the SIV and the P1 and P2. That is legal immigration. These are people who work for the government through contractors in many cases for the SIVs, like interpreters and those that worked on bases doing all kinds of tasks for contractors with the U.S. military. They are also people who worked for media organizations and nonprofits like my Lamia Afghan Foundation. I've submitted 27 P2 packages on families, and three of those have gotten to the United States now. So I'm hopeful that I can get the other 24 here, because they are very good people. They go through a huge vetting process, and it is legal immigration. And I'm very hopeful that we can get that turned back on.
All right. Getachew Bashir, Director of the Refugee Department at Catholic Charities Family and Community Services. How do you see this order?
Let me start from the last point that you mentioned about the president's promise to loving legal immigration.
Legal immigration.
This is the second term of his presidency. And during the first term, when we see what happened, refugee is legal immigration. It is more legal than the others because the vetting process itself takes about, on average, 2 years once the case is handed to the U.S. Government. So it is the most vetted, the most safe program that has been going on for many decades. But during the first administration, the number of refugees that are coming in this way is diminishing from about 50,000 from first year of President Trump's administration to 11,000 or 18,000. So even though there is a promise that the president loves legal immigration, that is not what we saw in the first presidency. Now the biggest issue we have is the uncertainty. We have discussed about the SIV programs, the special immigration visa programs. And this morning, we received a notice from our national office that says all refugee admissions is halted, is stopped, even though the executive order says starting from January 26, it is stopped right now. All pre-arrival preparation work is also stopped. But the recent notice that we received says the SIV program is exempt from this.
Okay.
But again, there is uncertainty going forward what is going to happen.
And again, the order that Getachew is talking about, which was slated for this coming Monday, apparently enforced now and going forward.
Exactly.
I've been reading stories about there are people almost getting on planes who are literally told, you're not getting on that plane. Is that correct?
Well, the way it is halted, stopped immediately, or all booked arrivals are cancelled and there will not be any future booking until further notice.
Okay. Ellen, have you heard that kind of description of what's going on? We literally see people almost getting ready to get on a plane and all of a sudden...
Yeah. BBC Pashto had an article yesterday that indicated that Afghans were actually taken off a plane that were scheduled to leave. I've not been able to get that translated into English, so I don't know exactly. But I mean, I trust the BBC and their reporting on this. But I mean, the crazy thing is, like, I have a family, an Afghan family right now in Rwanda, and they have gone through extreme vetting. They were asked 8 weeks to go, 8 weeks ago to do an extreme vetting form. Then they were asked again 2 weeks ago to do the same form. And then they were just asked this morning to do the exact same extreme vetting.
We're having a little issue with the microphones and some tech issues. So let's take our only break of the hour and we'll come back with our guests, get it all fixed, and continue the conversation on Connections. And Thursday on The Next Connections, for the first time in Monroe County history, 25% of county residents are age 60 and older. What are we doing to support the health and welfare of this growing population? We'll talk about it. Then in our second hour, a new children's book is teaching kids about the life and legacy of Rochester's own Constance Mitchell, the first African-American woman to be elected to the Monroe County Legislature. We'll talk about the book. It's nice to be with you on Connections here. Evan Dawson from our WXXI studios. Thanks for hanging in there as we tweak a little bit of that tech there. People much smarter than me are working on this problem. And speaking of people much smarter than me, there are four of them on this program. We are talking this hour about the executive order from Donald Trump, from the White House, and President Trump putting forward this order to halt refugee arrivals in the United States. And what that means immediately, what that could mean going forward, what programs that affects and doesn't affect, and maybe the intent and what's behind it. We're talking to Ellen Smith in studio, the founder and executive director of Keeping Our Promise, Geta Chow Bashir, who's director of the Refugee Department at Catholic Charities Family and Community Services, and on the line, General John Bradley, a retired lieutenant general in the United States Air Force, co-founder of the Lamia Afghan Foundation, Sean Van Diver, president and chairman of Afghan EVAC. I want to work through some questions that listeners already have on this, and I'm going to start on the phone with Angie calling from Western New York. Hi, Angie, go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, Evan, Ellen, Gigi, General Bradley, Sean, and the audience of Connections. My name is Angie Matisse, and I'm the communications and PR manager at World Relief Western New York. This is the Rochester-based office of an international humanitarian organization that partners with local communities to provide support for thousands of immigrants and refugees across the U.S. And I want to join your voices and express that World Relief laments and urges President Donald Trump to reconsider this drastic action to pause the refugee resettlement program. This program was formalized in 1980 by a law passed unanimously by the U.S. Senate and signed by President Jimmy Carter, allowing a limited number of carefully vetted refugees who have fled a well-founded fear of persecution to rebuild their lives in the United States. And let me tell you that according to the 2024 LifeWire Research Survey, 71% of evangelical Christians believe that the United States has a moral responsibility to receive refugees. We want to point the Donald Trump administration to key biblically informed principles that reflect the real views of American Christians that are in support of secure borders while protecting persecuted Christians and other persecuted minority groups. And last but not least, we invite everyone in our community, regardless of faith or background, to join us in signing the Christian statement urging the reinstatement of the U.S. Refugee Admission Program. That statement is available in our website at World Relief and in our social media platforms, Instagram and Facebook, under World Relief Western New York. And I could only say together, let's stand for compassion and justice. And thank you so much.
Angie, thank you for the phone call. I wonder if our guests in studio, Geta Chow and Ellen, if this is someone you've worked with.
Yes.
Okay.
I work with all the resettlement agencies here in Rochester. One of the things I like to help with is housing. You know, we stand with our friends at these agencies and support these statements. Absolutely.
Geta Chow?
Yeah, World Relief is one of the resettlement agencies in Rochester, New York. And as a resettlement agency, what we do is those who are fearful of prosecution in their home countries, who are victims and who have the last hope of coming here, like places like Ukraine, and establishing their lives. These are the people whom we are working with, and these are the people who are now affected and are unable to come, or some of them are unable to join their families here.
Angie, thank you for the phone call. Let me read an email that takes a different view. Again, we're talking about President Trump's executive order to stop refugee arrivals in this country. Andrew writes to say, Evan, we've had open borders for too long. This is just the first step, and it is the right one. That is from Andrew. So let's talk about that. And let me start with Sean Van Diver from Afghan Evac. Andrew, who is someone who supports President Trump, support him in this election, and is basically saying elections have consequences. This is the president's move on refugees is related to his concern about open borders, and he views it as the right step. What do you think, Sean?
Well, look, I appreciate Andrew writing in. I live in San Diego. I live at the United States-Mexico border. We don't have an open border. It takes me 3 hours to get across the border. And what I want to say is we shouldn't conflate issues at our border or issues with what folks believe is a crisis of illegal immigration with refugees. Refugees are legal immigration, and refugees are the most vetted. Refugees are vetted more than most U.S. service members, many of these people have polygraphs, right? But the United States Refugee Admissions Program is, like I said, the gold standard of vetting. And, you know, one other way that many of these people were vetted is we handed them our weapons and we said, hey, will you fight alongside us? And they sure shit did. And oftentimes they saved our lives. So I appreciate Andrew's input, but With all respect due, you're wrong.
I do want to say one other thing. And the extreme vetting that refugees and SIVs are going through right now was established by the Trump administration in his first term. Okay? So they're going through extreme vetting. They have to show their Facebook accounts, all their emails, all their telephones, their telephone numbers. They have to give the passport numbers of their family members and where they've lived. If they were only, you know, in Pakistan for medical treatment for 2 months, they have to put that in their extreme vetting record. There is absolutely a record on every single one of these families coming through. And this was established under the Trump administration, and it continued under the Biden administration, and it's what we have today.
General Bradley, if you can hear me, General, can you still hear me, General? Let
me see. Yes. Okay. You're not as loud as earlier.
Yeah, I in and out a little bit here. We're going to hang with it here. What would you say to Andrew, who emailed and said that this is a response to the perception of open borders?
Well, that's not what this is. I understand his concern there, and surely we need to do things about people streaming across the border. And we know a lot of people have come in illegally. We know some of them have committed crimes. Obviously, we should handle that situation, but we should separate it from legal immigration. People that are working on asylum, those can be legal immigration. The P1, P2, the SIVs, those are legal immigration methods that both Sean and Ellen have told you have extreme vetting going on so that they can be cleared in. Look, we've had immigrants coming to this country forever and ever. I mean, you know, President Trump has married two legal immigrants himself over the course of his life. Legal immigration is a good thing. It's made America better, and we should continue legal immigration. We need to do something about illegal immigration. That's what I'd say to him.
General, then, what do you make as a possible— what is your understanding about why this order was issued in the first place?
I think it got swept up into an overall immigration political issue for the campaign. And of course, we know that the first Trump administration and people who worked for President Trump in the White House at that time had very definitive views about immigration. They had views about Muslims coming to this country, which are not really in accordance with the principles of our democracy. And so I think this just got all encapsulated in one big immigration executive order without looking at the impact on people who actually worked for the United States military, worked for the United States government in the embassy, people like that, people who worked for American NGOs. I don't think they thought about that piece of it, and I think it needs to be reviewed, and I think we'll see a change to it. I'm hopeful that there will be. And there's a lot of support on Capitol Hill for legal immigration like this and for SIVs.
Well, let me read a little bit of feedback that I want all of our guests to kind of weigh in on. And General, I'll start with you, and then I'll turn to Sean and Getachow and Ellen as well here. A listener named Dallas says, Trump, I'm sure, just wants to review this program because of the Biden history. Dallas had some choice words for the Biden history and says that essentially, isn't it logical? This is just time for the new administration to review it. He said, I would think that Trump said he wants all immigrant flight programs to be reviewed. And I would guess he says they are all being briefly paused to do that. What do you think, General?
Well, that's probably true. It is a temporary pause. It's a 90-day pause. It can be renewed to go on another 90 days. But administration officials need to look at this very carefully during this 90 days. Homeland Security and the State Department would be involved in that. But smart, good people need to look at this and determine which parts of immigration should be continued to be put on hold and which parts should continue. There are many that need to continue. And there are people across the political spectrum that believe that as well, is my view on it.
Okay. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, look, a few things, right? I don't know how President Trump would tell, my friend Abdul, whose mom is stuck in Kabul, moving from house to house all the time, hiding, that they just need 90 days or more so Stephen Miller can review whether or not she deserves to come here. The U.S. rep isn't a secret. It's enjoyed a long history of bipartisan support. The idea that they would need to review it in some way is, I get why you might think that if you don't scratch a little bit further. As soon as you start scratching deeper, you know that, none of this has happened in secret. This has all sort of been around for a while. And it's no secret that one of Mr. Miller's targets was the United States Refugee Admissions Program. But I do think it's so important that people understand that it's legal immigration, and that not having this program puts our national security at risk deeply.
Let me ask our guests in studio if they want to weigh in on that too. Ellen Smith, you've got Dallas saying this looks like the president just wants a review.
The Biden administration, as I said before, continued Trump's extreme vetting procedures. What we did was we increased the number of refugees we allowed into this country legally, again, right? To previous numbers. And I know there have been arguments about cities being overwhelmed with refugees. New York City had a lot of refugees, or actually people who had crossed the border coming up from Texas that were shipped to New York City. Rochester, I believe we had 70 people that were brought to a hotel in our city. That's not what we are discussing. That is not what has been placed on hold. What has been placed on hold is the legal refugee system. Here in Rochester, we can take these families in. We have proven it time and time again. They are doing well. For my families, I've got 40 families that have bought houses since 2018. They are doing well here. We're getting them settled, places to live. They're contributing members of our community, as are all the refugees.
They've bought houses.
Oh, I've got 40 who have bought 40. Houses now. 40 families, yes.
And you've helped a lot more families. And there's, we don't need to have a digression here. But listeners, if you want to look up the archives for Conversations with Keeping Our Promise, we've had many over the years. I'm sure we will continue to. In a moment, we're going to talk a little bit more about what these organizations are going to be doing. Geta Chow, do you want to weigh in, too, on this idea that maybe this is just a brief pause for the new administration to take stock of what's going on?
First, we just need to distinguish between legal immigration and illegal immigration. When we talk about legal immigration, as discussed already, refugees is one of them, and it has been going on for many, many years, and it has no problem at all. There is no need for review because, as discussed, there are vetting processes, strict vetting process in place, and we do this because we have a moral obligation to help those who do not have safe place to live. As the leader of the free world, we have moral obligations. Some of the wars that these people are displaced from, we have been involved in them. So we have to fulfill those obligations, and there is no issue when it comes to refugees. Since the time we have started resettling, there haven't been any kind of issue that needs or requires vetting. So we need to distinguish between legal immigration and illegal immigration.
Okay, and then related to that, that I think everyone can weigh in on too, a number of listeners have pointed me to the statements made during the campaign by then-Senator and now Vice President J.D. Vance. In one interview, he kind of mused that, at least in Afghanistan, everyone claims that they worked for the government. Everyone wants to be an SIV. The implication was it's being abused, that everyone is claiming something that they don't deserve. And again, right now, it doesn't look like the SIV program is affected by this executive order on refugees. But there's also a viewpoint that the new administration has expressed about asylum seekers and about refugees, which is that that those kind of claims to status are abused. So whether it's SIVs, whether it's refugees, whether it's asylum seekers, this administration seems to take a very restrictive view, a view that says, hey, those systems have been abused in the past. We're not doing that again, even if that means we cut off the flow entirely right now. What do you think of that, Geta Chow?
As far as I know, when someone claims something, there must be evidence or proof to the claim. And we haven't seen, I have been working with refugees for over 10 years, and we haven't seen any kind of abuse in the system in the years that I have been working there. And the other, instead of just completely stopping the process, there are ways to, if there are any claims of this kind, there are ways to work on strengthening those processes instead of just completely stopping the process, which has a real life consequence. There are families who lived in refugee camps for 30 years. We have one family, a single person who came here after living in Kenya refugee camp for 30 years. And he came by himself, leaving behind his wife and children. And now he cannot be rejoined with his family. So it has real-life consequences, and there are other ways to do. And what I want to emphasize is I don't think all these claims have any merit to them. As mentioned by one of the participants here, we should really view the viewpoint of the people around the administration towards refugees and immigrants. I think that is what we should focus on instead of stopping a process that is already working and serving the U.S. interest and others.
Ellen, have you encountered anyone who tried to abuse the SIV process?
Okay. So there was the case recently of a U.S. citizen in Texas who was a contractor, and he was found that people could pay him for letters. And he was arrested. I don't know all the details of the case, but you know what? This was a 20-year war. And look at how many people worked for the United States. There's over 70,000, I believe Sean may know the number, but something like 70,000 people in the last government report that are interview ready. So they've passed that comm approval stage, and or the main person has, and so now it's time to interview, you know, the husband and the wife and the children. So I'm not going to say that the program has been 100% free from corruption, but I can also point back to an American that had done that with the letters of recommendation that are needed for someone who worked for the
U.S.
And
was discovered and dealt with.
And it was discovered and dealt with, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sean, do you want to add to that? Are you there,
Sean?
That,
I lost you for a second. Yeah, I'm here. Look, it's just, I don't have a lot more to say other than that this has been heartbreaking. My phone, since we've been on this call, has been full of Afghans reaching out saying, please help, please help, please help. What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And what we're saying, we're imploring the incoming administration that we're worried about SIVs being impacted. We're hopeful that they don't. We're hopeful that SIVs are just left alone. But refugees are already being impacted, right? They're already being pulled off planes. And the State Department is running around very confused. They don't know what to do yet. What we're hearing from inside is that it's being managed very poorly. And we think that's just like, you know, growing pains of an early administration. But we have an obligation here that we've got to get through. We've got to take care of these folks. And SIV is mandated by law. But last time it got slowed down through just checking things out. Right. So we don't want to see things slow down because people are using just checking things out as an excuse. And we believe, because he said it, that National Security Advisor Mike Waltz is a strident supporter of Afghans. And we hope that he will be very directive in his approach to the interagency that he manages.
General Bradley, do you want to add to that?
Explained it very well. I would say that then Senator J.D. Vance was maybe hyperbolic in saying that it's been badly abused by Afghans. It hasn't, because the first requirements for submitting an SIV application is you have to have a letter from the Human Resources Department of the contractor for whom you worked, if you're an Afghan submitting an SIV. I have heard of hardly any who have ever tried to submit a faulty application. I'm glad they caught this guy in Texas, and I hope he's prosecuted and dealt with the appropriate way in the justice system. But the majority of Afghans are not doing things like that. They are trying to come here through the proper process, and they are filling their forms out the way they're supposed to, and they're being vetted. I helped a man years ago whose children I'd helped come to the United States to go to college years ago, many years ago. It took him more than 10 years to be approved for his SIV. He was an interpreter for the U.S. Army in Afghanistan in 2005, and it took him more than 10 years to get here. It's an incredibly difficult vetting process. It takes way too long. It could be done better and more efficiently, I'm sure, but it is a very thorough vetting, and I think the program needs to continue.
I want to add one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this is about vetting. So I have a case in Rwanda, and this is when our system died before, and he was asked to do the extreme vetting form 8 weeks ago. Then he was asked 2 weeks ago to do the exact same form again and resubmit it to the embassy. And this morning he was asked to do the exact same form again and resubmit it to the embassy. He has done this three times. His answers have not changed,
same
and they're
form.
Not going to change. Same form, a DS-5535. It's not going to change. So I'm not sure like how much more extreme anybody wants, but the other thing is there is still an active court case with the International Refugee Assistance Project against the government because the SIV program is to take 9 months. And and they are still under a court order. The U.S. is under an order to make this work. So these cases are processed within 9 months, but it is not working, and it has never worked.
I want to read two more emails from listeners on these subjects as we talk about refugees and this executive order from President Trump halting the flow of refugees for now. And then before the hour is up, I want some of our listeners have asked how to support the various organizations, four really heavy hitting organizations represented on the program today. And they'll tell you a little bit more about what they are doing and what they need next. But let me just hit a couple of more listener emails. So Dallas followed up with a question about what the United States is actually doing in terms of foreign aid. He says, if we're paying the Taliban $1 billion a year in aid, can we just tell them not to kill the SIVs? Where does that money go? Do we give aid to the Taliban government, Ellen, that you understand?
It's my understanding that the aid is going as humanitarian aid.
Okay. And let me ask Sean and General Bradley if they want to win. Sean, anything you want to add there?
Yeah, look, you know, we've seen news reports out there that that's happening, and what we've heard from the UN and what we've heard from others is that that's sort of a misnomer. Like, that's not our bailiwick. We don't deal with that. The what we understand is that's all money going in for aid, and if the Taliban is intercepting that aid, I know that there's measures that are taken to address that. So, look, it's you can't believe everything you see on the internet. And anybody who's saying that needs to come with receipts. And it may be true that the Taliban is intercepting some of that, right? That would be terrible. But we got to keep, you know, people still need our help. And we were there for 20 years. So I think we have an obligation. And foreign aid is less than 1% of our national budget. So I don't really understand the focus on that.
Okay. General Bradley?
My wife asks me questions about this all the time. The humanitarian aid, that's a good thing that we do, and hopefully the Taliban don't intercept it and use it just for their own people. It goes to the people that are most needy. But I see reports. My wife tells me she sees things on LinkedIn. We have a Tennessee congressman in the Knoxville, Tennessee area who is on the internet all the time complaining that we're sending $40 million a week to the Taliban, to their banks, for them to use $40 million a week. That I have never seen any evidence of that whatsoever. I think it's fake news, but this Congressman Burchett has not produced the evidence to show that it's true, but he talks about it. And people online just run with that because they believe anything they hear or see, particularly if it's bad news. So I've never believed that we're doing that. I do believe we send humanitarian aid, which I think we should do. We send humanitarian aid all over the world, and we've been doing that for decades. And I think we should continue helping very needy Afghan families.
One other aspect of this, and Dallas will tell me if I'm interpreting this incorrectly, but Ellen, I think when you and I talk about the SIVs that you have brought to our region, and I say you're a force of nature, but your organization, Ellen. When we've talked about that, you've been clear about the threat to their lives if they don't get these SIVs granted.
Absolutely.
And part of what I think Dallas is saying is, absent bringing more SIVs, can't they just stay in Afghanistan and we tell the Taliban, if you want this $1 billion in humanitarian aid every year, it's on the condition that you don't kill any of these people? And is that a solution?
The Taliban hasn't really listened to us before.
Is that right?
Have they?
I think that
I'm shocked.
the general is shocked. Okay. So, but part of, I think, Alan, he's saying is, well, then just cut the aid if they're not going to listen. But
I don't know what good that does. I mean, we do have to keep a conversation going with the Taliban to get SIVs here and to get our P2 visa holders here.
Okay. And briefly, Roger says, we cannot ignore the racial component to this type of policy. The white population is shrinking and other racial groups are increasing in numbers. Many white folks consider this threatening to their power in this country. It's an email from Roger. I'll go around the panel here. Getachew, what do you make of that?
I think if we look at the U.S., it is originally a country of immigrants. And as long as we are behind the same ideals as a country. It doesn't have to be black or white, or we don't have to worry about colors. So what matters is just to have a common belief in one country and a common attempt to make this country better, regardless of who he is or who is in the country. So this shouldn't be a big issue.
Ellen, briefly, do you see a racial component to this?
Look, none of us, I dare say none of us belong here because this was Native American land. We are all immigrants. We are all immigrants. And I just don't go that this is a white country or whatever. I don't know any Native Americans personally. None of us belong here. My farm is on Native American land once upon a time. So I just don't buy that argument. I love living in Rochester because of the diversity in this community. This is what makes it a great community, and I love it.
General Bradley, what do you make of Roger's point there?
I personally have no concern whatsoever about the percentages of colors of people in this country. I'm a almost 80-year-old white guy living in Tennessee now, and I was raised in Tennessee, but I served in the U.S. Air Force for a long time, and I believe diversity is a very good thing in any organization and in any country, and I think immigration is good and has made America a better place. I am not concerned about ratios whatsoever. Now, that being said, I know there are people who actually do think it's a problem, but I don't.
Okay. Sean, brief comments from you on this?
Yeah, I'd echo what General Bradley said and what Ellen said, and I just don't – operating from a place of fear of people that have stood by us in our longest war doesn't compute for me, right? Like, it just doesn't compute for me. And I think those are dog whistle things that we just shouldn't – in fact, when people bring things like that up, we should ask them, what do they mean exactly? Because acting like there's any other – yeah, anyway, I just reject that notion, and I think that people need to really reflect.
Last 2 minutes, so let me give you all 30 seconds apiece, and I'll start with you. Sean Van Diver, Afghan Evac, where do you want people to learn more about your organization, and what can they do?
Sure. There's three things you can do. You can go to afghanevac.org/donate. You can donate. You can go to afghanevac.org/transition-letter and sign on to a letter to the incoming administration saying that you want to see this this change be reversed. And you can share everything you see on social media. Please join us today. Thank you.
General John Bradley, where do you want people to learn about the Lamia Afghan Foundation?
That we support Afghan girls' education. We have an Afghan women's medical clinic with a young Afghan woman doctor. There aren't many of those. They can go to www.lamia.org and donate. We're going to continue. I love keeping our promise in Rochester. I love Afghan Evac because they have been so effective. But we're trying to educate girls in the Lamia Foundation, and if you want to help, we would love to have your help.
Ellen Smith, founder and executive director of Keeping Our Promise.
People can go to keepingourpromise.org. We're always interested in financial donations and in volunteers. We have a May 1st gala coming up at the Irondequoit Country Club in Pittsford, and we're looking for gala sponsors, and we hope to see our local folks there.
And Getachab Bashir, director of the Refugee Department at Catholic Charities Family and Community Services.
We have lots of refugees already in our communities, and whoever is interested in helping, you can find us at Catholic Charities Family and Community Services.org.
I want to thank our guests for taking the time to talk about this issue, and I think in sober terms about where we are and where it could go next, and we'll be following that. Getachab Bashir, thank you for making the time. It's nice to see you in studio here.
Thank you for having me.
Ellen Smith from Keeping Our Promise. I know we'll see you again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's always nice to see you. And on the line, Sean Van Diver, Afghan Evac. Sean, an honor. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
General John Bradley from the Lamia Afghan Foundation. doing pretty remarkable work. It's nice to have you back, General. Good talking to you.
You're welcome. Thank you for covering this important subject. And I always love talking to you.
It's great talking to the General. And listeners, thank you for a robust 2 hours today, for hanging in there with us. From the whole team at Connections, thank you for listening. We are back with you tomorrow on member-supported public media.